Welcome to the Dignity and Respect in Action podcast. This series is brought to you by the UMass Office of Equity and Inclusion and features members of the university community and other experts in the field of diversity, equity, and inclusion. In these episodes, we'll learn about the work and experiences of our guests and gain insight from their expertise. Your host for this podcast is Dr. Nefertiti Walker, Interim Vice Chancellor of Equity and Inclusion, and Professor of Sport Management in the Eisenberg School of Management. And now, here's Neff.
Today we have with us Zachary Stewart, African American Studies and Legal Studies, Class of 22. We have Sophia Chang, Biomedical Engineering, Class of 22. We have Sophia Meadows-Muriel, Political Science, Class of 22. And we have Emily Steen, Food Science, Class of 21. Student members of the newly formed Racial Justice Coalition. This group of students came together this summer in response to the anti-Black violence that occurred this past summer of 2020, and to address systemic racism. First, I want to thank you all for being here today. I know that there's a lot happening right now. We're starting the fall semester remotely. The fact that you're taking the time to out of your fall semester, I know some of you are taking 6 or 7 classes, they're all remote. It's just a lot going on. So I really want to say thank you. We appreciate you all taking the time to be here with us today for what I certainly consider, and I know a lot of my colleagues and folks all over campus consider, an extremely important conversation. So to start us off, can each of you give a brief introduction of yourself? And why social justice work addressing systemic racism in particular is important to you?
I can go first. Well, thank you, Dr. Walker, for having me on this podcast today. And as you said, Zach Stewart, African American Studies, Legal Studies, double major. And for me, social justice work addressing systemic racism is important to me mainly because I find myself, you know, kind of at a crossroads here. Like I'm in my junior year here at the university, and I've got, after this year, I've only got one more year, and then, you know, it's like, boom, you're done, you're out of college. Like, what are you going to do next? And, you know, this past summer really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, the experiences that, I can't even really say opened my eyes. It showed me that, you know, that the idealized world that, you know, I'd like to think that we come from sometimes, that's not where we are right now. It's ugly, it's painful, it's, you know, I mean, as you said, we have been dealing with a lot, and, you know, it constantly seems as though there's another murder, there's another, you know, sense of injustice, there's another protest, there's another sense of police brutality, and it's a lot. And for me, you know, as someone who came in to the university as an Afro-AM major, I kind of take it as something where I look at it, you know, from the emotional perspective as a young Black man in this world, and I'm like, how can I do what I can to change what's happening? How can I try my best to do what's necessary, do what's possible to ensure that, you know, this future that might not happen in my lifetime, but could happen for the lifetimes of my two younger brothers and, you know, future generations of my family and whatnot, how can I do what I can to change a small part of the world in a small way to ensure that, you know, what past generations and in particular what my generation now, so that no one has to go through what we have had to go through. And because honestly, it's tiring. I'm gonna just be honest real quick. It's tiring. It's frustrating. It's scary. It's almost like, what's the point? Sometimes it's like, what's the point of even leaving my house without fear of getting stopped by the cops, or without fear of, you know, being like them asking me for my ID or whatnot? It's scary. It's not. It's not a way somebody should live. It's not a way anyone should live. Yeah. And it's So I say all that to say, I come in, you know, as someone who wants to do what I can with my majors to try and carve out a place in the world where, you know, no one else has to go through, you know, what we've had to go through up until this point. Or if they still have to go through this, they don't have to go through it as severely as we have in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
I can speak next. I'm Sophia. I'm a junior studying biomedical engineering, same year as Zach and Sophia. I think this work is important to me because I grew up in a really white town. Like, as a matter of fact, I know a lot of people have like the exact opposite experience, but Amherst is genuinely like the most diverse place I've ever lived. And as a result, like I feel like to a certain extent, I've grown up not really noticing my color and not noticing my heritage, even though the people around me very much did. So when I came to UMass, I kind of became more aware of the privilege I hold and the privilege I also do not hold. And I feel like doing this work is a way to connect me not only to my community, but to kind of pay back, I guess, for the time I spent not really awake and aware of the bubble I used to live in. And I think to a certain extent, I feel like this is something I can do. Like, it's hard to hear about the protests that go on daily, knowing that I can't help or I can't participate in every single one. But I know for a fact that I can change something about the community I live in now. Like, this is something I can do, so I have to do it, or nothing I do or achieve in the future will come from an authentic place.
Thank you. Sophia, would you like to go next?
Yes, of course. Also, let me know if y'all don't hear me. I actually just helped my friend try to make a community garden in Boston, so he just got some food right now. But first and foremost, I wanted to thank Sophia, Zachary, and Emily for even inviting me into this space. And I want to, again, stress the work that, like, y'all been doing. And I'm just, like, another person in solidarity and support through this process. And, like, I want to really stress that because, like, they put in a lot of work. And, again, I'm just trying to be here and change with y'all. Now, as for me, I've been learning about abolition and specifically white supremacy culture for about 2 years now. I've had the opportunity to community organize and do a lot of mutual aid services and political education within upstate New York and Ithaca, which was a school that I was going to before. And I'm here to just bring that energy and that continuation to UMass. Similarly to Zach, like, I question about, you know, how abolition is a lifestyle. How do I learn more every single day? How do I decolonize my mind? How do I address, you know, the white supremacy cultures that, you know, we've been forced to live by, as in individualism, as in capitalism, as in, you know, constantly having to around myself with, like, productive people, or I'm going to be seen as lazy, you know, the various forms of anti-blackness, you know, that has been ingrained within us at every single moment, that I've been really just trying to work with others and grow and learn and create that cycle of, you know, liberation and defining what that means, honoring the voices of folks before us, because I think, again, addressing our past is super important and our elders, but also, like, being Afrofuturists, like, we're creating the future we want to see every single waking moment that we take breath, right? And really understanding, like, what does that look like, but also understanding, like, we're creative people. Like, we've thought of things, you know, at the lowest of points in this world. So I'm excited to see, you know, what is the things that we want to see and how do we put that into fruition? And I think this coalition is a beautiful thing and is the gateway as we begin to reframe, reimagine, and destroy systems that have been in place that are stopping us from getting to that point.
Thank you. And Emily.
I'm Emily Steen. I'm from Worcester, Mass. Yeah. I caught a little bit of what Zach was saying about the future generations and trying to make sure that no matter how bad we've had it, that it's our duty to kind of help future generations not have to endure this constant bombardment of microaggressions and hatred. I came into UMass as a food science major because I really felt comfortable in the science field, problem solving. You always had an answer. You could always get to an answer. But as I've kind of developed in that career path, I've added public policy perspective and really getting into food policy because I couldn't possibly see myself working in a field where there's so much disparity. Even in my hometown of Worcester, you have the haves and the have-nots. And I wouldn't be able to stand myself if I was ignoring food insecurity as it happens to be in my field. And also just like small-scale farmers, it's really difficult for farmers to feed themselves, but they're feeding America. So I've pretty much been privy to those disparities that exist within my field. But this summer, with all of the racial tensions boiling over, I mean, it's nothing new. I wouldn't say I was surprised at all with anything that's happened. It's a reality for the majority of us, even on this call, dealing with that, seeing that every single day, even when it's not trending on social media. But I think something that changed this time around was that national momentum. So for the first time, I wasn't just afraid. I felt hopeful that there were all these people willing to stand together, stand up, stand against the hatred that we're being faced with. And I saw UMass as a place that was accessible and could be changed. And there was so much momentum. Then I met Zach and we kind of fell in together trying to create something. Like Sophia was saying, I'm not trying to go to war. That sounds so exhausting. I'm not trying to fight the man. I think we have a lot of creativity, especially within Black people in general, specifically Black women, to just build this up. We're heading into a new world. The old world's currently on fire. It's up in flames racially. The climate is bad. And we're just, it needs to change. We're going to keep dying otherwise. So might as well keep fighting and working and building and creating and celebrating life in the way that it's meant to be celebrated, not being oppressed anymore.
Thank you. That was powerful. I wish, before I go to the next question, I wish there was a way to capture the reactions to some of the things you were saying. Because we had some snaps going on that I could see, but of course the people that are listening won't be able to see. From Emily's colleagues with RJC, we also had, you know, Sophia fluffing the curls. The curls were popping, so she was taking advantage of that moment, looking at herself on the phone. So there's a lot of energy, a lot of positive energy that's going into this moment right now that I wish that the folks that will be listening to this podcast later can see. Thank you for that. Thank you for those introductions. I think so much of your passion and your energy for RJC and for making UMass a better place comes from your experiences. And I appreciate learning a little bit about that. Emily, I want to stick with you for a second to answer this question. And then I'll jump in. Whoever wants to, you know, jump in at any point, please jump in as we move along. What is the RJC? I've said RJC, I've said the Racial Justice Coalition. What is it and how was it formed? I want to hear a little bit about the organizing process, and I think this is where some of you will have to jump in collectively and tell this story. But I'm just really interested in this story, and I think listeners will also be listening, interested in the story into how did you come to be?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, late May, early June, I would say was the boiling over point in the nation. And a bunch of people at UMass started trying to figure out where they stood. A lot of people stayed locally in their towns because we're all at home currently. But a couple of us focused directly on UMass. So I started organizing, trying to get some grip on what I could possibly do at UMass. And that's when I met Zach, who was also organizing and has a lot to say on this matter in a second. but he was working more so collecting people together, which was incredible. He created an Action Steps doc. He invited anyone and everyone. He had over 300 folks, organizations, individuals, everyone involved at UMass collaborating on this document. And it was really just a collective place for people to voice their opinions. And only a small section of that was for Action Steps, was for demands. And that's kind of where the RJC came from. It was like, okay, well, we acknowledge that there's a need. This has come from a whole lot of people at UMass. What can we do to actually accomplish this? Let's take this forward. But I want to pass it to Zach because I know that he was ready for this.
Thank you, Emily, for doing that for me. But I mean, I honestly, yeah, no, I think you summed it up beautifully. And what I'll just say from my end, you know, when I first thought about, you know, like when I first created that Action Steps document, it wasn't, I honestly wasn't envisioning something like, you know, what the Racial Justice Coalition has now become. But I was hoping for, I was hoping and praying for a space where Black, Indigenous, people of color, and our allies could come together and to create a space where we could all just, well, first collectively take a breath and then, you know, start moving, shaking, all that, and just recognize the fact that we, you know, that there's something going on in our nation currently, and, you know, that we as college students, even though we might not think we have enough say now, we do. It's just we have to get together, and we have to like bring ourselves together collectively. So that was my goal in terms of that document, and I call it, looking back at it now, I call it a more so info dump thing, where it was kind of like it was a chance for, you know, those individuals and organizations that I added to it and that others added to it to bring in ideas of, you know, the actions that they wanted to see us take, you know, at UMass, whether it be protests or whatever. But obviously, since we're in the middle of COVID, we can't really do a protest. And then the demands that we wanted to get out of, you know, or we wanted to bring to the university, you know, once they were properly formulated. And, you know, as Emily said, you know, my thing was kind of just trying to get as many people together as humanly possible. And I know she said everyone at UMass. Arguably, I'd say it's a solid, like, I feel like it might be 20% of the people that are on that document, maybe less. But when I met Emily, and I met her through a mutual friend, I was told that she was working on something similar, but she was working on it from the financial aspect, and I was like, all right, bet, because I'm not good with numbers, I'm not good with money, and you know, I was like, I need somebody to like kind of bring me back to earth every once in a while if my ideas are out there. So, you know, her and I got together, we had a meeting. It took me a minute to kind of articulate my thoughts. And, you know, but like after that meeting, it felt like it's like Sophia said, we felt kind of connected, at least I did. Like I felt like, you know, I gained a sister I never had, like, you know, the bond was tight. And, you know, from there, the demands that came out of that original Action Steps document were formulated into the 5 different task forces, and then we met up with one of the other co-chairs, who unfortunately couldn't be with us here today, but James Cordero. So the three of us got together and we were like, all right, let's do this. And so we kind of just, so once the task forces were semi-created, we were trying to come up with a name, and then we had it took us a minute, but then we came up with Racial Justice Coalition. Now, albeit we didn't know that there was already one in place on campus, but so we kind of co-opted it. But, you know, and I'll just say really quickly, you know, ever since then, again, we're talking about tail end of May going into the first week of June, and it's August 31st. I can say for myself that I am in awe and I am forever grateful to Emily and to James for, you know, like helping me see this through and for, you know, pushing me forward, even though sometimes, ooh, Lord, this is tiring. And sometimes that I'm gonna just be honest, like for 2 seconds, there have been times where I've almost thrown in the towel because I get so overwhelmed by this work and I get so frustrated and I'm just like, I'm done. But and this is where I say Emily is like the sister I never had. Like she kind of is just like, listen to me, if we don't do this, who else is gonna do it? You know, it's not just for us. It's for, you know, it's as we said earlier, it's for future generations as well. Like, I mean, we got to do this. Like, the momentum is here. Let's go. And I'm like, you know, it's that kind of little swift kick that I need to like get me going. So
it feels like you all like played off each other. Like you know your weaknesses were Emily's strengths and vice versa. And James.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd necessarily call them weaknesses per se. I'd say more so to use the I believe it's a psychological term, but areas of improvement. So I would say almost that, you know, you're right, I feel like we do play off each other a lot, and it's, yeah, like where, you know, where Emily might come in with the whole logistical piece, I come in with this like huge idea bank, and you know, James kind of just, well, not even kind of, James comes in with the rationale as well. And I mean, we all come in with a bit of rationale, but I feel like sometimes their rationale kind of works better than mine. And so, you know, yeah.
Thank you. So I want to, that's a really good point though, that you bring up, because I'm really interested in both Sophia's and their perspectives of jumping in to this after Zach, James and Emily sort of got it going as co-chairs, jumping in, and what were your feelings? Like, what felt like it would be the most insurmountable part of being a part of RJC and doing this work for campus and doing this work for each other and for the students on campus?
I came into the RJC, I think, a month, maybe a bit more after it started. So by the time I came in, I was... okay, it's like kind of shady, I guess, but like I was kind of amazed at how fluidly everything works together. Like I felt like every single meeting I went to, there was no time wasted. You know, like you got the agenda, you looked at what we were going to discuss, and then like we had a discussion. There was no like messing around about it. It was like tightly organized, which like I think was very much needed, because this whole thing has been during the pandemic. Like,
yeah,
I think for the vast majority of this, like no one has actually met in person just because like of the current situation we're in. So I think because of the distance we were put under, it's difficult to feel as if what you're doing has a distinct tangible effect, mm-hmm, especially with some of our goals that might take upwards of a few years to figure out. But with constant communication, like we have a Slack, we have like really dedicated email listservs, like there's a really active Instagram, there's constant like connection and touching base. It's a lot clearer to figure out like what our objectives are for each week and each month, yeah, and each year going forward.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. And for me, again, like I really just transferred like 2 months ago with all this pandemic stuff, financially with my family. And like the first thing I wanted to do when I got here was to see what folks were doing. I do things back home in Boston, so I kind of want to keep that same energy, but also be in solidarity with what people were already doing. I didn't want to make something new or miss out on like what was already happening. So one of my closest friends, he like basically sent me like your email server, and I started getting into that and just like reading through. I'd always like try to plan like which ones I'd go to, and I actually started through the Restorative Justice Task Force. I started there, going there first, and then they were the ones that were like, yeah, like you need to meet these people, like you need to meet Zach, you need to meet Emily. And then being in space with y'all, first of all, y'all are so organized. Like I can't stress that enough. Like I don't think people understand, just like looking at the document, how ridiculously organized y'all are. And that's hopeful from a, you know, accountability standpoint. Because when you set your demands, you actually have dates and expectations, not only for yourselves, but for others and the administration. So I knew, like, once I saw that, it was over. I was like, yep, like, these are the people that, you know, generally want to make change, but are ensuring that there's different ways in which they're, you know, continuing what they want to see. So that's been, like, super helpful during this process to really help with imagination. And like Sophia was saying, like the acknowledgement that like a lot of this stuff is going to happen when we're not here, but at least we have like the infrastructure framework to support those that are, you know, coming after us to continue this work.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I'm going to jump around a bit because I want to be respectful of your time, and we're pushing close to five already. It feels like we've been having this conversation for 5 minutes. What do you see as the most difficult challenges that we have to overcome as a community right now to ensure that UMass is a welcoming home for all of our students during their time here?
I got this one. First, we have to become a unified community. We have to embody the definition of community. A community is safe and beloved when all of its members are supported, and that means by each other. That also means by its leaders. I want to emphasize, we're not talking about utopia. We're talking about something strictly within reach. And the RJC has kind of served as a microcosm of that. So I would say the most difficult challenge is and will be to amplify the voices of the unheard. At the RJC, we reflect a system that actively seeks that input from marginalized people and puts tremendous emphasis on support. The questions we've posed to students these past 3 months are, what would make you feel safer at UMass? And what would make you feel happier at UMass? And then we work from there. So going forward, the most important thing, the biggest challenge for some people, as we've been told, is asking those uncomfortable questions and accepting the difficult responses that come with them. And then mobilizing effectively to provide immediate support, anticipate unvoiced need, and be proactive. That is my vision of a better, unified, safer, beloved community.
Thank you for that. Anyone like to chime in? If not, I'll go to the next question. So the Racial Justice Coalition has come to the university administration with demands for action against racism and for academic equity and healing our community amidst racism, to name a few. Can you tell us a bit about the list that you created and what you see as your next steps towards achieving those goals?
So we created those demands out of a list of requests from our community. So the way it works is every meeting we have people fill out or contribute to a running table that's comprised of a list of ideas and requests they envision to that like a non-racist UMass would look like. So from that table, we consolidated and like drew inspiration from other communities of color around us, like what they're advocating for, what they want to see. And that was where we consolidated those ideas and demands into those categories and a few others that you just listed. So right now we're working on outreach towards individual departments to get some of the more department-wide demands in motion. I know other members of the RJC are working directly with the upper-level admin in university to make sure what we're doing is heard and like focused on.
Yeah.
I think one of the great things about our demands is that there's a mix of stuff that can be done fairly easily, or maybe not easily, in a fairly short amount of time, like making the website where we report instances of hate a lot more accessible. Mm-hmm. And then there's more overarching things like our ongoing work to divest from UMass PD. So right now we're looking to get what can be done soon, and get the conversation and pressure started on what we know will take longer.
That's great. And I can, of course, in my role as interim vice chancellor for diversity, equity, and inclusion, I can speak to some of those demands, and the concerns that you all had related to things like the website and how, we were appreciative of that, right? Because sometimes we're developing parts of our website and we're having student consultation, but things change and things need to be evolved. And I think, that was a really good example of you all pointing out something that needed to be changed, needed to be evolved, needed to be more accessible, and us doing the work that we needed to do to respond to that in an appropriate way. So thank you. Thinking about the long-term impact of your work and the work and the long-term impact that your work will have, what is one change that you hope will have a lasting impact on how future students experience UMass?
See, I can't choose just one, but I mean, I'll try. Just one off the top of my head would be, and I'm gonna kind of mix it with the other question. In just in terms of the Center for Multicultural Advancement and Student Success, it's the chance for, the students that work there both now and in the future to have autonomy over the programming that, comes out of CMAS, and in particular comes out of the cultural centers, but also, when registered student organizations use the space, that, the students that work at the centers are able to not only, feel as though they have to kind of maintain the space, but also if they so choose to, to freely engage in the activities that the RSOs are using the space for, because, RSOs, don't normally just book a space, weeks or even months or sometimes even a year or 2 years in advance for no reason. They use that particular space, for a particular thing. And I'll just give an example real quick. Just before we had to leave because of the pandemic, the Stonewall Center did a collaboration with the Malcolm X Cultural Center, where it was a LGBTQIA+ themed dinner and conversation, where it was a chance for Black, Indigenous people of color and their allies to get together and, just find community and just be able to just be themselves without that fear of, without that fear of judgment, without that fear of hurt, without that fear of just the sense of, just to be themselves. And I was able to take part in that. So that's my one thing I'll say, just to be able to have that sense of, being able to take part in programming as a cultural center staff member without feeling restricted.
Thank you. Anyone else want to chime in on this one? And again, the answer, their question is thinking about the long-term impact that your work with RJC will have on future students' experiences at UMass.
I work very closely with the academic, the Racism in Academia Task Force. I'm also in a few other organizations and boards within the College of Engineering specifically, looking to decolonize our curriculums. And I'd like to see a lot more of those efforts take place on a more widespread, university level basis, because I know, personally in my classes, I've had very few female professors, very few professors of color, and absolutely no women of color in like positions sponsored by faculty, like at all. And especially as someone in STEM, like racism is so institutionalized in like our medicine, in the way we design things. And I know in a system that's based on white supremacy period, there's only so much that a non-racist curriculum can do, but also that's at the same time a huge stepping stone, in my opinion, to causing systemic change. So I think it's a really impactful start, not only just for students with privilege, but for underprivileged students to know that this is indeed a place for them, and this is a place where they can study and feel safe.
Thank you. So the last question that I have here for you all are, what programs have you seen at UMass or in other communities that are working well? And what can that teach us about how to be a better campus here at UMass?
Yeah, I can begin. So first and foremost, I will blatantly say my own ignorance within that, because as someone that is a transfer student that hasn't even been able to like physically be in that space, like I'm coming from a space of ignorance. So I just want everybody to know that. But from like having friends here, like always honoring like the cultural orgs first and foremost, as being a safe haven for students, mentally, physically, you know, that's always something that we should always elevate. And I think something that I'm interested in, the reason why, you know, I was able to meet Emily, was because me and two other Black women, that also go to UMass, are considering proposing this cohort, this transformative justice cohort, only for Black and Brown students, that is away from the institution itself, because for whatever reason, acknowledging, you know, we are walking in contradiction when it comes to a lot of this stuff, and sometimes you do need that degree of separation to make change, and understanding, like, there's levels to it. Like, we need to be branched out within every specific point in this universe if we want to make change, right? Like, we need people within the system, out the system, around the system, about the system. And that's how we generally destroy something, right? And so I'm so happy and so excited to pitch this to y'all. And we've been in this process right now of trying to formulate this TJ cohort, and what transformative justice is. Is a political framework. It's from Black and Brown, queer folk, lower income, you know, folks with disabilities. Like they was the ones that been created that that framework, and it's generally a lifestyle. But it's the acknowledgement of, you know, really moving away and destroying things at the root of the system, right? If it's a tree, we got to go to the roots, got to dig it up. In this case, for me and my fellow creators, that's looking at the carceral state. The carceral state includes police, ICE, foster care systems, all that jazz, and understanding that we don't need those systems. We don't need them. We never needed them. Indigenous people for centuries have been, you know, doing their own thing without police, by doing circle process, by doing restorative justice practices, and trying to get back to that, trying to get to the roots. But also with TJ, it also acknowledges that you can't be within an institution. It can't be institutionalized. That kind of is very paradoxical and kind of defeats the purpose. So that's why we kind of wanted to make this cohort. But what this will include is conversations around abolition, liberation, what is mutual aid? How can we do that for ourselves? What does autonomy look like? Really defining that for us. The acknowledgement that, like, yes, like, the nurse, Title IX, all these things can be very traumatizing and triggering for a lot of people. So how could we, you know, heal each other when folks are going to harm one another? Because it's impossible to say that we aren't going to cause harm and receive harm. That's impossible, right? So how can we at least as a community come together and talk about these kinds of difficult things? If we're going to fight for something, we have to make sure our base foundation is solid, away from, you know, white supremacy culture and all the other isms in this world. TJ is definitely like a important space to begin to develop that together.
Sophia, remind me. Sorry to interrupt you. Remind me what TJ is again. TJ, what is this thing?
Yeah. Transformative justice.
Transformative justice. Okay.
Yeah, like if you look at restorative justice, we have a task force at UMass. Restorative justice is basically looking at one situation, so one moment of harm or one conflict, and fixing that specific situation, but not looking at the broader picture, right? So an example would be, you know, Jim called Jan something, a racial slur, right? Making sure that Jan feels safe and you hear her needs and the things that she's going through, but not being able to question, like, why was he able to say those things? Why were there no repercussions? Is everybody else complacent with these kinds of things? What are our values as a community? Those are like the larger things that lead to then to transformative justice.
Yeah. That's perfect. Thank you for explaining that. Cause I think, again, I feel like a lot of our listeners, especially on campus here at UMass, are familiar with restorative justice, but not so much familiar with transformative justice. So thank you for that.
Of course.
So, you know, I first want to thank you all. I mean, this has been an engaging conversation. I've learned a lot, so I know our listeners are going to learn a lot, both about, you know, the Racial Justice Coalition, about each of you as individual people, your experiences, what brought you to this, but also about where you see this going and the ways that you want to ensure that future generations of UMass students feel the impact of the work that you're doing right now and feel the impact of the time and energy that you're putting towards this. So thank you for sharing that, and thank you for teaching us today. Is there anything else, any sort of last parting words that you have for our UMass community, both related to the RJC, but also individually to yourselves and sort of this moment that we're living in right now?
I didn't get to share my love with this room earlier, so I just want to take a moment and shout out everyone in this room sharing the space. It's so beautiful. I love being here with you guys. And we have the same theme. Sophia got to witness it the other day at our meetings, and we try and make sure that we celebrate. We have so much to be afraid of, so much to be sad about. We try to make sure that we are celebrating the people who are present, who are putting in the work, who are putting in the extra time beyond those six or seven classes that they may be in. But I'd like to say thank you to anyone listening to this podcast. I'd like to say thank you to everyone who's supported us so far, who supports us in the future. RJC, the Racial Justice Coalition, is not a registered student organization. We don't get any funding, but we keep going nonetheless because we have important work to be doing. And beyond just being a safe place for people to come and voice their needs, we try and serve as a platform. So we want to make sure that anyone, literally anyone who is unheard at UMass, specifically BIPOC students, they can use us as that platform and have easy access to have those conversations with admin so that this is sustainable going forward. No one should have to present a beautiful document of 15 pages of demands in the future. There should be constant dialogue, back and forth, understanding. No one should be afraid of talking to admin, and no one should be afraid of talking to students in the future. That is the only way that this will serve a sustainable purpose going forward. But that is my goal of the RJC, to at least have started that platform. We have a beautiful platform, and we have great admin such as Nefertiti Walker listening to us, supporting us, and seeing us through. And we have a lot of friends in high places right now. We want to make sure that, again, we're not at war, we're building, we're collaborating, we're trying to get to someplace better.
Thank you, Emily. That was beautiful and very well said. And I think the piece that I really appreciate is this idea that we are building, right? Like, we're not at war. What RJC wants for campus is what we all should want for campus. So we should all be in this together. So I will say that I absolutely appreciate the work that you all have been doing and your leadership in this area. And I appreciate you sharing those thoughts and sort of the blueprint of how you got here with our listeners today. So if no one has anything else, I wanna thank you again. Do you have something, Zach?
Yeah, I was
okay,
just gonna
pause.
Say, I sent you in the chat the it's been a long day, y'all. The IG and the Facebook handles for the Racial Justice Coalition, just so I don't know if there's a way if you can transcribe those for the podcast. But yes, y'all join us on Instagram and on Facebook. You know, I mean, we're here, we out here, you know, as Emily said, this is a space for anyone and everyone who feels unheard, you know, for any and all BIPOC, whether you be a student, staff, faculty member, you know, come through. Like, that's why this whole movement is here. And I mean, what I'll say is, as I said earlier, I am forever grateful to have had, you know, this opportunity this summer to, you know, be a part of this wonderful, wonderful movement. Albeit, you know, born in struggle, born in all this just tension, you know, this senseless violence that we have going on in this country. It's nice to know that there are others who feel similar to me in that, you know, there has to be something done about this and something has to be done soon. And what I'll just say really quickly is I normally am only one of a select few, if not the only, Black brother. And when I say Black brother, I mean Black men in a room. And what I'll say is, you know, during this process, it has been absolutely beautiful to see the amount of Black men, Black women, you know, non-binary folks, just everyone across the spectrum just coming through and just recognizing and just, you know, this community that we have. And just, it's beautiful. And, you know, and what I'll say, just one last thing, you know, just that sense of if you don't know exactly where to start and if you don't, and if you want to start, you know, just come to a meeting. Just come to a meeting. It's low key. I mean, we'll introduce ourselves. You know, we'll be friendly. We don't bite. you know, just come through. Yeah.
Thank you, Zach. So I'm going to really quickly share Instagram posts or the Instagram handle for RJC is UMass RJC. The Facebook is UMass Racial Justice Coalition. And if there are any other social media accounts or anything else that you all would like for me to share, I will absolutely share that as part of the transcription for this podcast. So again, thank you, Zachary. Thank you, Sophia C. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Sophia M., for taking the time to have this conversation today. We so absolutely appreciate you all. And we're, you know, quite honestly, so proud of the work that you are doing to move progress forward on this topic of systemic racism. So thank you and take care.
Thank you, Nat.
Of course. Thank you.